In the aftermath of the massacre at Virginia Tech University in Blacksburg, Virginia last week, we have to ask a question. What have we learned? What are the most important things to take from that tragic episode? You're listening to Longitude. It's Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, and I'm Darris McNeely. We were all stunned and shocked and saddened by the tragic occurrence at Virginia Tech University last Monday when a student armed with two pistols, it appears, went in on a rampage across the campus, killing 32 students before taking his own life. All of this has been chronicled and documented and covered from every particular angle that can be imagined in the days since. And still, we ask questions as to why and how. I have to admit that as I watched this unfold last week, I found myself having emotions that were a bit different from past massacres of this type. What happened in Blacksburg last week came about 8 years after the shootings at Columbine High School in Colorado back in 1999, where more than a dozen students and staff were shot by two students there in that tragedy. And I remember what took place then, the media reaction, our own horror and shock that took place at Columbine in 1999, and then watching the reaction at Blacksburg last week, gauging my own feelings about it, seeing and watching the news reporters and the students and the commentators and reading about it and listening to conversations about it, it seemed to me that there was something different, that we reacted in a different way to this particular episode last week than we have in the past. And I had to ask myself, what's happened? What has taken place during this time? Well, I'm not the only one, it appears, that's asking this question. There have been articles that brought this up as well. In last Friday's Wall Street Journal, the April 20th edition of the Wall Street Journal, columnist Peggy Noonan had a column entitled Cold Standard, and she was talking about her conversations and reactions to the shootings at Blacksburg. And she mentions, and let me just quote, she said as she was talking with a friend, "We talked about what was different this time in this tragedy. I told my friend I felt people were stricken because they weren't stricken. When Columbine happened, it was weird and terrible, and now there have been some incidents since, and now it's not weird anymore, and that's what's so terrible. It's the difference between, quote, that doesn't happen, end of quote, and, quote, that happens." That's true. At one time, we thought things like that didn't happen, but now they've all become too commonplace. And even last Friday at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, another employee there went on a rampage, shot another employee, and then shot himself. And fortunately, that one didn't get out of hand or involve any more than that, although the two tragedies there were more than enough. But I wonder if something has happened. In the April 19th edition of the Wall Street Journal, there was another column written by Daniel Henninger entitled The Numbing Down of America. Not the dumbing, but the numbing down of America. And he asked the same questions. And he looked at what has happened since that day in Columbine in 1999 and what happened in Virginia Tech last week. And again, what's probably happened to our country as a result of so many tragedies, so many mass killings, so many suicide bombings that we read about and see in the Middle East, in Israel, and in Iraq. And there's been a coldness, perhaps, that has set in. Let me just read a part of what he wrote here. This was from the April 19th edition of the Wall Street Journal. He said, speaking of Blacksburg, "This has nothing to do with not caring or turning cold to tragedy. But one deals with what the world brings. And given the pace of such stuff now, the adjustments one has to make have come quickly. After September 11th, after years with the Iraq War, and after a lifetime of media coverage of tragedies, large, small, and phony, it would not be surprising if people begin to resist drawdowns on their emotional reservoirs. The media itself has become cooler and even clinical in its reporting of domestic tragedy." And I think there's a point there. When you look at what has happened since 1999 and the Columbine shootings and what took place last week, we have gone through a number of events. We had the Intifada begin in Palestine in late 2000, and suicide bombings began there, where Palestinians would strap bombs onto their bodies, walk into a cafe or a restaurant in Tel Aviv and blow themselves up, killing dozens of other Israelis. They would do that publicly, and that began to erupt across the state of Israel during that period of time. And then, of course, came September 11th and the thousands of Americans who were killed in the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center, and the airplanes. And we went through that. Then the Iraq War began in 2003. And in the recent years, we have seen in Iraq multiple suicide bombings in the sectarian violence that is going on between Shia and Sunni Muslims just in Iraq alone. We've seen this in Afghanistan. But the focus on that and the impact on our own lives and our emotions as we hear about it, read about it, see the after effect of it, we have grown used to it. And that has had an impact upon the way we view tragedy, such as the shootings of 32 faculty and students in Virginia Tech last week. You know, I also realize that even as we look at our television programs, programs like CSI, CSI Las Vegas, CSI New York, CSI Miami, that have been very popular in recent years, take us through each week a forensic study of death, of murder, and the impact of violence upon the human body in such detail that I suppose if we watch those shows enough, we could nearly qualify for a bachelor's degree in forensic science. But we watch that, and we get absorbed in it, and it's fascinating. And I wonder what the impact of that is in our life, so that when we come to something like this, we have to ask what is taking place in American society. Daniel Henninger concludes this column. He says, we may be passing through a period, as Europe did after World War I, when people became hollowed out by repetitive exposure to violence and death, real or manufactured. And that does have an impact upon people's lives. I was reminded of a statement that Jesus Christ made in his Olivet prophecy in Matthew chapter 24, where he was talking in answer to the disciples' question about the signs of the time of the end. When they were sitting in the shadow of the temple there in Jerusalem, and the disciples had put to Christ this question of the signs that they should understand regarding his coming and of the end of the age in verse 3, and he began to tell them things to look for. And he makes a statement in verse 12 of Matthew chapter 24, Christ said, because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. Lawlessness will abound, sin, iniquity, violence, tragedy, sin of all kinds, sin on the magnitude of war, suicide bombings that take place in the hundreds and kill the thousands, or one random single act of violence perpetrated by a disturbed young man, killing 32 faculty and staff member and students of his own university, and then taking his own life. The love of many will grow cold because of lawlessness abounding. We could talk a long time about that, but Christ is basically saying that one of the signs of the end of this age would be a coldness growing over society. So I ask, what has happened from Columbine to Blacksburg? What's happened in our society? Well, a lot of things have taken place. And my reactions last week, and perhaps your reactions, mirror what's taking place in our society. Perhaps in all of us, there's been a numbing, a coldness crept over us to dull the reaction, the sensitivity, the understanding of such tragedies, to be able to put it all in proper context. It's something for us all to think about, something for us to, in a sense, take as a warning and make sure that we don't grow any colder, that we don't lose our sensitivity to violence, and certainly we don't let lawlessness that abounds around us or perhaps within or upon our life cause us to grow cold. I had one other thought in regard to this because of where we may be in our world right now, because of what's taking place, looking at what Christ said here. And the thought took me to Revelation chapter 11, to another incident that is in the future. This is a prophecy of the well-known two witnesses, God's two witnesses, who are given power by God to prophesy for a period of time to two entities, two beings called the beast and the false prophet that are going to reign at this particular point in time, in the time of the end. These two witnesses are going to have power to shut heaven so that rain doesn't fall during the time that they prophesy. They'll have power over waters to turn them to blood, it says. And they're going to testify against the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit and against the false prophet. And eventually, however, their bodies are they're going to die. The beast is going to triumph over these two witnesses and kill them, it says in verse 7 of Revelation 11. In verse 8, it says, their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. And then that city is Jerusalem that is being spoken of here. Then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put into the graves. And so the whole world will see this. Now, we understand very clearly that with the advent of satellite television and our communication, that this very easily can be done this very day, that two bodies lying in the streets of Jerusalem could be viewed by people around the world. Well, that's what's going to happen. What's interesting as well to note is that their bodies will not be put into graves for 3.5 days. Not even the decency of burial to these two individuals who have defied this political power of the beast and who have manipulated, by God's will, the weather patterns of the world to make their point, to show that who they were and who God is behind them. All that will involve is going to bring people to the point where they were going to rejoice over their death. And verse 10 is the kicker. Those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, make merry, and send gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. And so people are going to make merry and rejoice over their death. This is perhaps the coldest of the cold that one can imagine. And this is what's prophesied to happen in the future. So we've moved from Columbine to Blacksburg, and people note and sense that something has changed. And that describes where we are today, that we're not as sensitive as we were. There's been a coldness creep in. There's been a numbing down that's taken place. We fast forward in prophecy to what we read here in Revelation 11, and we see that there is going to be an even colder period like ahead in terms of human emotions and human reactions, to where they would not even bury two bodies, but let them rot in the streets and then make merry and rejoice and party as a result of their death. This is a state and a description of the world ahead at the end of this age prior to Christ's return. It's something to think about as we come to grips with what has taken place with the shootings last week and what's taking place in our society and in our larger society with the violence, the wars, and the impact that that's having upon our thinking, our reaction, our sensitivity, and our love. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.